You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Brian Lenny with me for the first time. Brian is an engineer by trade. He is the founder and editor of Junior Stocks Review, which you can follow up with that by going to juniorstocksreview.com, juniorstocksreview.com. It exists to offer information, ideas, and strategies for managing speculation in the junior resource sector. Brian first discovered mining stocks over 15 years ago and was immediately intrigued. In 2014-2015, he anticipated that the resource sector was closing in on a bottom, and he wanted to access more capital for the expected upcycle. So he sold his home and invested two-thirds of the home sales proceeds into resource stocks. And by August 2016, he saw his investment funds triple in value. Due to his large gains, Brian quit his professional job as an engineer and now devotes his time to researching and investing in mining stocks. Junior Stock Review gives first access to his subscribers to his top picks and commentary on the individual metals markets and his own notes from the field, because he goes out to see the projects, and it also does interviews with top minds in the resource sector. I just recently saw one in which he and a colleague of his did one with Rick Rule, and hopefully get Brian's take on that in a few minutes by now. But anyway, Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jay. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so this it is great to have you. And we met up when, in fact, we were at the Irving Resources presentation up in Toronto at the PDAC, and that's when I first met up with you personally. I knew that you were on the with the a speaker at the Metals Investor Forum, but I had never really met you until then, so I'm really glad I did. So since this is your first time on the show, I'd like to have you talk a bit about your investment philosophy and how that impacts you when you write for your subscribers. You say your letter is for managing speculation in the resource sector. So why are you focused on speculation? I get a sense of maybe that's because of your success after you sold your house and parlayed that into really great really great results, I suppose, with more speculative investments.
Yeah, absolutely. It's addicting when you start making multiple baggers of your money to focus more on that area. And that's absolutely what attracts me to speculation. In terms of my approach to the sector, a big part of what I've found over the last, 10 years is that I have to protect my downside. And I do that by being a value investor. And really what that has led me to do is focus on companies that have, typically a 43-101 or at least a 43-101 resource or some sort of economic study. And using my background as an engineer, I can go and look at that study or form my own sort of study on an existing 43-101 resource and come up with a value. And, there's a number of components that make up the value of a company, but that quantitative portion of it is the big part. And so when I form a value for the company, I compare that to its market cap. And, obviously I'm looking for companies that are selling for less than they're worth. And they have those other factors, they're led by good people that have access to money and, of course, have an action plan that's going to cause news flow in the market and hopefully, garner attention by the market and getting that value fully realized. So that's my approach in a nutshell to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Irving Resources, for example, they don't have a resource yet. You obviously don't just pick companies with resources. What might you need to see to pick one that doesn't have a resource?
Well, that's a great question. You're right. And so while the majority of my portfolio is focused on the developers, I do have a select few explorers. And I'm very picky when it comes to the explorers. I want to stick to the best of the best. And so using Irving as an example, to me, they represent a huge opportunity because of the potential they have. You know, for your viewers, they know, you know, Japan really has been untouched by modern exploration for the last, you know, 40, 50 years. And really, Irving is that, you know, first mover in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years that's gone in there, assembled a stellar package of projects. And they've done that on the back, I think, of, you know, Akiko Levinson and obviously her being Japanese. And I think having a foot in the door when it comes to creating relationships and, you know, opening doors that I think that, you know, maybe others can't do. And so Irving's portfolio projects, I think, are the best in terms of the companies that are in Japan right now. They include, you know, huge swaths of land in high potential areas. Right now they're in Hokkaido, and I think that, you know, there's tons of potential for Momu, and I'm really excited to finally get back to drilling on a consistent basis after this kind of hiatus almost over the last 2 years with COVID, you know, creating all those problems. And I think with this increased news flow that we're going to be seeing, and of course this influx of cash, you know, the potential for Irving to get market recognition is definitely there. And that's one of the reasons why I've got them as one of my explorers in the portfolio.
Yeah, indeed. And one of their key shareholders is Newmont Mining. Also, what's really interesting about this project is it's different than most mining projects. They don't have to build a mill, you know, and they have the, as you know, the host rock is marketable. They get for silica, for the silica host rock is marketable for the refineries, the copper refineries. And so it's, to me, it's just really a very unique story. And I was just interested in finding out why you, as a little bit more conservative speculator with looking at 43-101s, would be interested in that. And as you say, you're very picky. Well, I think I share your enthusiasm for Irving, that's for sure. Well, getting back to this notion of speculation, what kind of investors are suited for speculative investments? I mean, certain kinds of people, it seems to me, that might not be, their temperament might not be the best for the nail-biting kinds of investments.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I guess one big thing about investing period is, I think, self-awareness. You need to know who you are and how you operate. And so I think for the type of investor that's interested in speculation is someone that I think has enough money that they can, you know, I shouldn't necessarily say afford to lose 50 or 60% of their money.
Yeah.
But it's not going to make a huge difference if they lose it. You know, yeah. Speculation is not the same as investing. You know, investing, you're buying a part of a company that in my definition is cash flowing, is cash flow positive, mm-hmm. And is generating some sort of product or service. With these junior mining companies, you're very much betting on the people and their ability to execute on an action plan and, of course, garner recognition from the market. And, you know, you can have right now is a really good example. You can have companies that are executing. Management is doing everything they can, you know, completing their action plans and completing them with positive results. And the share price is going down instead of up.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, it takes a certain type of person to be able to look at that as an opportunity rather than, you know, run for the hills.
Right.
And so for me, it spells opportunity, and you've seen my life change because of it. Mm-hmm. So for those investors that do have the stomach to get through years like this, mm-hmm. It can be a major life-changing event if you can pick the right companies and hold through these types of markets. But it isn't for everybody, and you definitely need to do some self recognition before you start putting money into the junior resource sector, because it definitely isn't for everybody.
Well, I have to ask you, you sold your house, and that no doubt required your spouse's agreement. Mrs. Taylor and I went through the same thing. We sold our house. I didn't parlay into the same kind of returns you did, however. I did take a certain percentage of it and buy gold, and that has worked out. That's been a smart move. But what did you see specifically that caused you to think the resource sector was at the bottom, or nearly so, in those years, 2014, 2015?
Well, you know, I definitely didn't know that we were at a bottom. Like, I definitely wasn't calling a bottom, but I thought we had to have been getting close. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the biggest driver, honestly, Jay, was I wanted a change in my life. You know, I'd come up at a university and I was an engineer, started working on the floor as an engineer, and then I got a so-called promotion into management. And you know what? I really wasn't enjoying it. I had a young family, working a lot of hours and, you know, away from them. And I wanted a change. And uh-huh. that's what prompted me. I said, you know what? I think the market is getting cheap enough that I can make a move here and, you know, still have the downside protection that I would in normal times. But this is one of those opportunities that if I'm right, it can really make an impact. And it took 3 years to kind of unfold, right? So I sold in 2013 and then I deployed over the next 2 years. And then it wasn't until 2016 that I really got paid off.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it was kind of nerve wracking because
sure.
we were in this precarious position. I wasn't worried about money because I had my job, but all my savings were basically in the market. And as you say, I had a very understanding wife. She, you know, she quite honestly has showed more confidence in me than I have in myself at some times. And I think that's a big factor in it, is her support. But it was a hard slug over 2 years, but you know what? It did change my life. And I was able to leave a career that I was doing very well in and become a private investor full time. And really, I haven't looked back, and I've, you know, made more money in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years than I did in that first 10 years in the steel industry. Yeah. And so, like, if you have the courage and you can pick the right companies, you know, there is a ton of money to be made in this sector.
Yeah. Well, money isn't everything, and I think you recognize that. I mean, you can, Mrs. Taylor and I have a son. He's about your age, I think. He's in his late 30s, and he's a software engineer, and he wasn't interested in continuing on with that for very long for some of the same reasons you're talking about. I mean, it's the pressure, it's the grind, and, you know, and having a life that is, you know, where you're more free to do things you want to do and to live your life and to share your time with your loved ones. So, I really understand that. I just want to ask you, there's, you know, I guess you're focused primarily then on the precious metals.
Well, you know, honestly, I'm agnostic to the metal. Mm-hmm. If you go back even a couple of years, I was really big on nickel, and mm-hmm. I was the only one talking about nickel. Again, maybe I'm just really early because, you know, I invested in a big way in a junior nickel company. And again, I had to wait a couple of years, but then last year I was paid off with almost a 10 bagger on this company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my background comes from steel manufacturing, so mm-hmm. I'm very much attached to the base metals.
Sure.
You know, I think that the practicality of the base metals, I think, is probably better understood by the general person out there.
Uh-huh.
And I think in terms of me, it's deep in me. I totally connect with the base metals. But 100%, I'm investing in the precious metals. And if you look at my portfolio right now, it is out of the 18 companies that I cover and own in my personal portfolio, 16 of them are precious metals focused. And so that it really what happens is the value directs me to where I want to go. And I see so much value in the precious metals companies that's where all my money has been going over the last year. And that's not to say that when precious metals, because I will sell, when precious metals start to go up, I start to take profits and I mm-hmm. look for that next place to put my money. And maybe with a recession on the horizon, maybe that's more so in the base metals, because there's some terrific opportunities on the base metals and energy metals. And hopefully there's some opportunity there.
To what extent do you think that's driven by the movement towards green energy?
It's a big part of it. You know, if truly we are, you know, electrifying the world, and the EV adoption is going to be as hyped as it's said, there's going to have to be more mines not only discovered but put into production. And it's a huge opportunity for investors on that portion of the market. What I would say is, you know, after Biden got in the fall of 2020 there, things really exploded in value. And there was a lot of stuff that I kind of missed on that turn. And then when I sort of recognized more, bought into it more, a lot of these valuations had kept me out of it. meaning things were too expensive for my taste. And really, it pushed me to precious metals. And I think that was, you know, in retrospect, it was okay, because I think precious metals is where you want to be right now.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at a chart from Michael Oliver, who is a technical analyst. We had him on earlier in today's show. He passed out a chart recently that showed the Bloomberg Commodity Exchange, that index. And we certainly did from the end of 2020 on upwards to just recently. We saw that in general commodities outperform gold and have continued. Recently, they've pulled back a bit, and I can understand. When we look at this for the long term, we saw a huge increase in, and then we're talking soft commodities, all kinds of commodities, rising up to 230, I think, and then it went down to 60 after. So this was 2009 with the crash, with the market crash, the financial crisis, and then back up, but it has been very dismal. Commodities in general have been really bad performers until recently, but I can see where. On the other hand, gold has had, if you draw a line through the trend, has been a steady upward trend. I would suggest it's relative to the monetary debasement that's going on. But maybe just switching to macro, to some macro views and macro discussion now. How determined do you think the Fed is to keeping their foot on the brakes until they beat inflation? How far are they willing to take it, do you think? Or do you think there will be a pivot? Because we had David Stockman, who was in the Reagan administration, was on this show a few weeks ago, and David was talking about, he really surprised me, because he was suggesting that the Fed is really scared. They're scared about people with torches and pitchforks coming after them. I mean, you have the middle class that is being absolutely decimated in America, and I suppose in Canada too, where people just can't, you know, not people that have had some savings. There's a lot of millions, half the population don't have, are living paycheck to paycheck, and now all of a sudden they can't put food in the tables and gas in their car, in their tanks. How far do you think that this Fed is willing to push and to keep their foot on the brakes? How far will they take it before they pivot?
That's the billion-dollar question, I think, right now. And if you, I guess, if you look at the market, I think, is telling you that they're going to stop and maybe retreat. I'm more skeptical. I think that a lot of the inflation that we're seeing is supply driven, meaning the COVID lockdowns and the impacts it had to supply chains, plus the Russian sanctions,
right,
have really played a huge part into why we've seen the inflation numbers go through the roof. Therefore, my point is, I don't think, you know, the Fed can raise interest rates almost as much as they want, mm-hmm, and depress the demand side of the economy. But in the end, I still think that we're going to see higher prices. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not necessarily sure that that they will give up without there being a crash. And so we'll see. To me, I don't let it bother me in terms of trying to time the market exactly. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for companies that are selling less than they're worth. The company valuations, and compared to the gold price as it stands right now, or any of the commodity prices, are typically pretty good. And sometimes things are cheap enough. And it doesn't mean I have to take a full position, but I will deploy cash into companies that I think are high quality and have catalysts, mm-hmm, to garner market attention. So I definitely think about where the Fed is headed and how it's going to affect the market. But I think at this point, it's a great time to be deploying cash into the best of the best companies. Mm-hmm. And that's how I look at it.
Yeah, well, certainly the key is having the staying power. As you mentioned, you had to sit through some of these investments for quite a while before they paid off. And that's, you know, having enough capital to be able to sustain long periods of wait time is very important. And that's, I want to ask you, what did you make of last week's 75 basis point hike?
Well, you know what? I definitely thought it was going to come. I was even thinking, you know, after seeing what, you know, the ECB came out with 0.5% and Canada had a percent. I definitely thought we were going to see a hike. I was even thinking that we might even see something more aggressive, considering the inflation number released at the beginning of the year, you know, our month, uh-huh, beginning of the month at 9.1. But they went with the 75 basis points, the same as the month previous. I really wasn't surprised by it. I think what I was surprised by was, you know, the market reaction definitely coming, you know, basically 2 weeks before the event. And, you know, now looking at it today, it looks like we're already looking to the next one, which I believe is in what, September is the next FOMIC. And it should be an interesting month, you know, ahead of us, you know, leading up to that next announcement, and see if they indeed remain in hike mode or whether they're going to change course. It should be really interesting.
You and Bill Powers did a very interesting interview with Rick Rule. We just have a couple of minutes left, my engineer is telling me, but maybe you could share that. And also the video, where can people watch the video? And then just tell people where they can go to learn more about your service.
Sure. So Rick, you know, I obviously know Rick to a certain degree now, but even before, Rick was a mentor from afar to me.
Sure.
Had a tremendous impact on, you know, how I looked at the market and how I deployed the money. So these interviews that I've done with Bill have been terrific from my standpoint, because I get to ask him questions that are on my mind, and I think that will parlay into better investment choices ahead. In our latest interview, we talked about jurisdictional risk, you know, mainly the stuff that's been going on in South America, and pertaining a lot to, you know, environmental permitting. You know, are these isolated events, or is this a bigger trend? And he answered how I thought he was going to, in saying that this does look like it's a bigger trend across the sector. You know, we're going to be seeing more stringent permitting process going forward. Further than that, he's got a number of different tidbits that you can pick up from the video, and I highly suggest people going onto YouTube and taking a look. In terms of myself, I publish, you know, Junior Stock Review Premium. It's a weekly newsletter, and it includes market commentary. I do a portfolio rankings. Remember, the portfolio is a reflection of the companies that I personally own and vetted. And I do portfolio review videos. And I also, for yearly subscribers, I also offer access to the Diligent Spectrum. It's a video series focused on education in the sector. So for those interested, juniorstockreview.com is the best place to find that out.
All right. Excellent. Well, we'll have to leave it go at that. We're out of time, but I want to thank you very much for being with us. It's really great to hear from you, Brian, and we'll have to do it again sometime. That's for sure.
Thanks, Jay.
All right, folks, so this is it for this week. Next week, Alistair MacLeod will be with me to talk about his recent article that he wrote, Gold and the Upcoming Recession. And Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me as well to talk about SK Mining's amazing precious metals VMS deposit that is being outlined now and drilled aggressively in British Columbia. Until next week, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.